open up the champagne, pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in.
Hello there, and happy game day. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Today, the final preseason game of the year, the Browns and the Bears, 8 o'clock at First Energy Stadium. And our Ohio Business Machine Hot Topics, what do you need to see as a fan tonight? What do you hope to take away from this final preseason game? And then we know the starters are going to play. What do you hope to see from the starters? We will hear from Hugh Jackson. We will chat with Scott Petrak at 2 o'clock. We'll also hear from Corey Coleman. And you and I will give people things to watch for. But final preseason game, there are probably a couple of mindsets. Now, typically the starters don't play in this one. So for the starters, it's get dressed, warm up, and then don't do anything.
And then take your shoulder pads off.
And take your pads off. Now, tonight, that'll happen, but it'll happen on a little bit of a delay, probably after a series or two.
Yep.
But what's the mindset for, you know, I think when you look at the Browns 53-man roster right now, and you and I have been doing that, and tomorrow we'll kind of put together our pass at that 53, you kind of know, I would say, you know, 46 to 48 or maybe even 50 of the 53.
Right.
So there are really only a handful of spots up for grabs.
Yeah, and I think, you know, my point all along, you know, kind of since the Tampa Bay weekend and after we made some of those moves with Paul Kruger, Andy Lee, and trading away Barkevious Mingo, is I would not be surprised if, and as you said, you know, prior to the show, doing your very best to put together a 53 and you struggle with those last five spots, I wouldn't be surprised if three out of those five spots currently are playing for another team in their last preseason game, and they become available as cuts happen. They clear waivers. We've got a high priority on these players, and we're able to snatch them and add them to our 53 to head to Philly.
Yeah, and I think that you're exactly right. I think there are some positions, and we'll go through kind of every position in a what-to-watch-for segment coming up here. We'll also take your calls, 216-578-0850. And, of course, we want you to tweet the show as well, at Nathan Segura, at Browns underscore daily, at Matt Wilhelm 35. But then again, don't be disappointed when you get
check it.
When he doesn't look at it, nor does he respond to you. But it's there. It exists.
It does.
If you go to your page.
One
day you'll see it, and it'll just be a wonderful, wonderful thing. When you look at a guy like Joe Thomas, and one of the things we talk about with Joe Thomas, and of course he's on Twitter now at JoeThomas73.
Where's his followers at?
Let's go.
Is he at like 30,000 yet?
Did you see, what I want to know is, did you see the video he put up catching John Greco singing yesterday?
No, I did not.
Oh, it's fantastic. So he's really taking this to it.
He caught him, or did Greco know he's being videotaped?
I think it was a catching, the way that it was presented.
Okay.
I believe that it was catching. Here, Joe Thomas, here he is. Joe Thomas is up to 17,700.
Okay.
I mean, he was at 9,000 a week ago.
Okay.
So, I mean, we're doubling our numbers here.
But he's got to be by when?
That's some
progress. To a million?
He wants to be up by next season.
By next season.
I told him. I walked with him. We were walking to the bus in Tampa, and I was like, all you need to do is talk to The Rock and get The Rock to tweet you out, and you'll be over a million.
Here's where it's going to happen. I'm telling you, is when Joe goes to Hawaii – and he posts pictures of him and J.J. Watt, or him and Ben Roethlisberger, or these guys that have a million-plus followers, when he takes a picture with them and it reaches everybody, and they actually go to Joe's timeline and go, he's a good guy, he's pretty enjoyable, maybe not a fan of the Browns, but I'm a fan of him.
He's actually hilarious to follow on Twitter as well. Now, what was interesting, and your former teammate Aaron Rodgers,
yes,
out of the blue, sent The Rock.
Saw that.
A signed jersey.
Signed jersey.
So it was on his Instagram.
Yes.
It was on his Twitter.
Well, how big did he jump?
I that's what I was gonna, okay. I wanted to look at. I mean, he's already big, but that sure had to be a big jump.
Couple hundred thousand.
So I was like,
Joe, imagine.
I was like, just send him an autographed Browns jersey,
yes,
and invite him to First Energy
sure
Stadium. He'll retweet it.
You're, yeah, like,
there are only so many people that have been 9-time Pro
Bowl. And is it, am I mistaken,
seasons,
or is Joe also an Under Armour endorsed athlete, which The Rock is as well? So they might have that commonality.
I believe you're right.
I think. I know Nate Orchard is. I know Nate Orchard is an Under Armour athlete.
He wears all that rock.
Correct.
So yesterday, Joe Thomas posted the two videos as I talked about. One is he's got John Greco singing, and the other one, he takes Cody Kessler's key. You know, they get what they're at the hotel and everybody's envelopes laid out, and he took Cody Kessler and said it's going to take him a while to find his key, and then now that's a happy ending. He posted about an hour later.
What I want to see Joe do, I want to see Joe pull like the. Like the stuffing peanuts or the ping pong balls and fill up like a rookie's car.
Completely.
You know, like Corey Coleman's Mercedes G-Wagon. Like, prior to Philadelphia, like as the prank on the number one guy.
So where does that escalate and where does that stop? Because I've you've seen the ones, I think it was on Hard Knocks, where they took the tires off of somebody's car,
yeah,
and then they came back and did something. And then it got to the point where they actually ended up.
If a veteran does it to a rookie, the rookie can't get anybody back. It's like, ha ha, tee hee, point finger at the new guy.
So what happens if the rookie does do something
back? Then the rookie, it's like going to be the game of tops.
Then it's like.
And the veterans have, whoa.
A veteran.
They've got the great experience of how to not lose that game.
Yeah.
And I think they'll go to extremes.
I think they
to the
will.
Point
That's
where you know, wave the white flag.
Property can be damaged and whatnot.
Yes.
But Joe Thomas obviously doing a great job on there. But my question for you is, do you think we see him? I know we're seeing the starters. Do you think we see Joe Thomas
no.
tonight?
No.
Okay.
I don't. And I think as I went back into, you know, say, what was it? Prior to Green Bay, maybe, when he had that, you know, was out those couple days or right after with that the back tightness that everybody made a big deal of, and it was, will we see Joe Thomas again in the preseason? And we have. And I think all it really did for me was solidify that his back is not a serious issue. And if it is, in fact, still not a serious issue, I don't need to see Joe Thomas. I would think the dog pound and any Browns fan doesn't need to see Joe Thomas because we know what he is. Now, I think for Hugh Jackson and what he has to take into effect is, can this offense take the incremental step, as you asked earlier, you know, not only myself but our listeners, what are we expecting to see from the starters tonight in that limited opportunity that they're going to get? I want to see them take a step that they didn't take in Tampa to build the belief again that they're going to be a certain type of team, you know, come September 11th. And can this offense do it with someone besides Joe Thomas at left tackle, or does that hinder what we do in the run and pass game?
Well, we saw Dan France go in and struggle mightily against Tampa Bay Buccaneers last week.
But they're not going to play the starters this week from Chicago, as they're getting their rest.
I guess Noah Spence is working with the starters down there, but Noah Spence is a rookie who came in and looked
right
like Lawrence Taylor for a time in that game, which is not anything you want to see. But you just wonder if you want to keep him protected, but I think you're right. You know, the dual-edged sword of it is, if, let's say, a whiff happens in Joe Thomas' spot and a blindside hit happens and RG3 gets hurt, are you going to be mad that you put RG3 out there without Joe Thomas? But at the same time, if Joe Thomas were to get hurt, would you be like, why in the world did I play Joe Thomas?
Yes.
So it's a tough situation,
it is.
But at the end of the day, it
but
is football. But
if you play, if you were to go to Vegas and say, yeah, in the 15 snaps that Joe Thomas may play tonight, and the fact that he's not missed 5,960 or whatever it is, you know, of regular season football games, the odds are very, very high that Joe Thomas can survive those 12 to 15 snaps. As opposed to, can we get a real snapshot of what this offense is going to look like, and we potentially lose our quarterback? Now, how much is now that, that's to determine, like, what's the drop off beyond RG3, you know, with Josh McCown? Because we've probably had multiple trade offers for Josh McCown, and we have, you know, we've listened,
owns many franchise
but never
records.
Correct, but not indulged in any of them to the point where it became a reality.
Yeah.
So that's, we value Josh McCown, and we value him for a reason, because I don't think it might change who we are offensively, but I don't think the drop off is all that severe because of the questions surrounding RG3 right now.
I totally agree with you, and Josh McCown is a very good thrower of the football. We saw that last year, that set the record for consecutive games with 300 yards passing, Browns franchise record, most passing yards in a regular season game as well. So, yeah, I think that there, you would be good there, but obviously you want to go in the season with your guys. I think it's important to come out, have that one good drive on offense, involve Corey Coleman. I want to see an RG3 completion to Corey Coleman in the series or two that they play. I also would like to see them try to move the ball down the field. You know, the vertical stuff is great, and it is great, and it's going to open other things, everything else up. I mean, the stat that our guy Rob McBurnett put out there, which I've been touting in some of my radio appearances, is that there are four receivers in the National Football League that have two or more catches of 40 yards in the preseason. Two of them are on our team, Terrell Pryor and Josh Gordon, and both of those guys did that with RG3 at quarterback. But we want to see some of the crosses, some of the slants, some of the just the intermediate stuff, moving the ball down the field. I think
the dinky
we'll see,
dunk.
I think we'll see some Crow. I think we'll see some Duke. They could come out and run the football a little bit. But I just want them to get in there and get out as quickly as possible.
Yeah, you know who I'm actually excited on the flip side of the ball, and I don't know what type of preseason he had, but Leonard Floyd, the linebacker out of Georgia, if he's going to be healthy tonight and how much we'll see of him, because he was a Barkevious Mingo-ish kind of build,
oh, yes,
very lean but fast and explosive and productive at Georgia. And he's a guy that I think should be a playmaker. And also the other guy that I'm excited to see was a guy that you and I liked an awful lot last year was Kevin White, you know, out of West Virginia, the wide receiver. Now, he missed his entire rookie year last year, and as you know, and he's diving back into things. I think he's healthy and going to play. I want to see him and see how productive he's going to be. I know it's not relevant, you know, to us because we don't play the Bears, you know, in the regular season, but I just want to see from when you cover some of these young players in the draft and you potentially peg them in and around where the Browns are drafting, we've had those conversations about why it would make sense for us, and I just want to see what they're doing in that other uniform.
And I want to see what some of our young guys, I think we'll get the biggest look we've gotten at Seth DeValve so far this year. Hollywood Higgins uncharacteristically dropped a couple of passes against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He hasn't dropped anything really in Berea all offseason, no. And I want to see him bounce back. He should get plenty of time today. Taylor Gabriel, will he play his way onto this roster after 6 catches for 60 yards in the second half against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? So there are some things to watch, and we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. We will also go through, you know, what we're looking for, position group by position group. And, of course, there are, you know, some questions, who will make this team, where the final battles are. I think you and I can highlight those fairly well, and then we'll kind of draw attention to the spots where there could be help coming from elsewhere. But there is a lot to watch in this game as a Browns fan, because it is going to be the biggest look you get at a lot of these rookies.
Yes.
Ricardo Lewis goes, this is going to be really your first good preseason look at him as a receiver. And so there are things that I think will be intriguing.
There are. And did you hear at what the Washington Redskins are doing in this last preseason game? I think they are leaving 24, if I'm not mistaken, or 26 players in Washington for their final preseason game. So they're traveling with 49. And what made me think of it is when you say you're going to get a look at some of those guys, those young players and those bubble guys, and essentially some of the guys that, you know, that haven't passed the eye test thus far yet, that you probably know you're not counting towards the 53 or even close to maybe making the 53-man roster.
They played that game last night because of storms in Tampa. They moved it up to Wednesday night. They're just, to your point exactly, their quarterback was Nate Sudfeld. He played the entire game from Indiana. Yes, played the entire game. Mike Glennon threw 5 passes for the Buccaneers. Peyton Barber, who ran very well against us, was the main running back. Mac Brown and Robert Kelly were the running backs for the Redskins. So you really didn't even see in this game, they didn't even let you see some of the rookies that people were excited. They didn't let you see anybody in that game last night, which I thought was very interesting. But I think today you will, on our side of things, get to see these rookies. That's what happens when you have a 14-person rookie class. And I'm excited to see DeValve. He certainly is more comfortable. And
I want to see DeValve used the way DeValve's going to be used. Because and I don't think it's going to be a surprise. I mean, for this guy, as you look at the Cleveland Browns, you're not going to go, oh, when they bring DeValve in the game, he's going to get the football. We've got so many weapons now that you can fit him into the mix. I want to see him flexed out. I want to see him win versus a nickel. I want to see him win versus a linebacker. And he might not necessarily get the football on that specific play, but my eyes will find him. And to see if he is as smooth and as athletic as we think he is as a tight end slash receiver, and if he could actually, you know, have an impact on us offensively.
Yeah, and I think that he can be a mismatch guy. I think he's gonna be flexed out a lot, and it'll be interesting to see him. Obviously, they made some moves. When you look at a guy like EJ Bibbs not here, those reps are gonna go to Seth DeValve. I don't think you're gonna see much of Barnage, so I do think there's an opportunity to see a lot of these rookies and get a good look at him. I think there is some competition on the offensive line. We'll pay very close attention to who goes in, because it's interesting. Dan France is the second team left tackle right now, but I don't think it's...
He's not making this team.
I don't think it's a lock that he makes this team.
No.
So there's going to be a lot to look at. We'll talk through that. We'll go through the positions. We'll take your phone calls. We'll read your tweets. 216-578-0850. Our people, what do you want to see tonight? Are you watching this game? Let us know. 216-578-0850, CBD on ESPN 850. Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm here. We'll go to the phones before we start to take a look at this roster and what to look for tonight. Let's go to Marty in Cary, Ohio. Marty, welcome to the show.
Thank you. First-time caller. You guys do an outstanding job. My thoughts are tonight, I'd like to see some positive production so these guys can get some good attitude, positive attitude, taking that locker room so we can take a football team down to Philadelphia and kick some butt and get the first victory of the year.
I like it.
I like it. A little positive
momentum.
Way to
start off the show.
Yeah, get down in there to Philly. I like that. There we go.
I mean, at least we hear people call and they express their disappointment and frustration.
Oh, we do get some of that. You're
right.
Yes.
But, you know, we need to think positive and get these guys believing they can achieve. If they believe, then they'll get it done.
Yes, I don't disagree with that at all, and I think that there have been a lot of positive things to take away from it. I think if anybody needs to come out and have more of a dominant performance, honestly, it for me, it's on that defensive side of the ball. I think they need to come out and really kind of establish themselves as, you know, getting in a couple three and outs, maybe forcing a turnover, getting to the quarterback, because these are guys that haven't played together yet, and I think it'll be good to just get them out there and get them in the mix.
Yeah, no doubt. And I just want to see a stop the run on first and second down, and as you said, get off the field on third down. And now I understand if a team converts on third down, but I want to see us get into third and five plus situations so that it becomes a pure passing down. You see Ray Horton maybe play the 3-4 front, maybe play the 4-3 front. You don't know what he's going to do, and that creates a little bit of deception about how, you know, you game plan the Cleveland Browns. And then get into some, not the exotic blitzes that we'll see because we're going to hide those, but some of the basic stuff that these guys can execute and let these guys win in a one-on-one situation with these young players, these guys that we're going to rely on. They win their one-on-one and get the sack, get the pass deflection, you know, get the quarterback hurry, get the knockdown. Those things that you can tangibly see that when done consistently, it becomes the way a winning defense is played.
And we need to see that.
Yes.
And we need to see signs of that.
Correct.
A seed of that going forward. And I'm excited to see Ogbon and Orchard go out there as your starting outside linebackers, see who's on the line, who's moving around with them. Has Nassib earned his way into the
lineup? I want to see some turn protection and a back try to come block Ogbon off the edge.
And I want to see him blast him, say, get off me. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. One of the questions that I got here on Twitter that we can talk about for a second is from Big Noobs. He said, I'm interested to see Derek Kindred. If he comes with the starters, he's starting to come on late, a big hitter. He's a guy who got a lot of first-team reps down in Tampa Bay. They're talking about using him. His speed has surprised the coaches. They think he can play some free safety as well as strong safety. They think that he and IC can be interchangeable that way. Same with Poyer, but this is a guy that we've noticed stood out immediately against the Atlanta Falcons.
Correct.
Flies around the field. Had a great week of practice down in Tampa Bay. He is a heavy hitter and quick and tenacious. Has stood out on special teams. And we're still waiting for a safety to actually make a play in a game. But he's been around the ball and made more plays than anybody thus far.
And see, the biggest impact is, you know, you talk about, you know, his role on defense, but I think what really stands out and why he's flashed the way he has is probably because he's played the best in the most realistic spot to what he's going to play in the regular season, which is on special teams. You said he's been a standout. He's always around the football. He's on every single one of them, essentially, which means he's earned the trust of Coach Tabor and Coach Jackson to be able to go out there, and he becomes reliable. And that is something that I would think if I were Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry, Paul DePodesta, it's very refreshing to have a guy like that as a late-round pick. And there's questions about a few guys that we've taken before him, and yet he's the guy that has bought in and is giving us his all. You know, he is tough. He is reliable. He is consistent. And I think those three things out of a draft class, the more we get that out of these players, and maybe they don't have to fire and be, you know, they don't have to pay dividends in year one, but as long as we get, you know, relentless and smart and coachable and consistent, those things you can collectively win with. Some this year, but most of the way down the road.
Luke Overmeyer says he's hoping to see a rushing touchdown tonight. His biggest worry on offense is our run game. I think our run game's actually looked good. We just haven't stayed on the field long enough to really put it together. But I think Crows looked very good running the football. Duke Johnson as well. P. Myers Golf, our guy, says, I'm looking for addition by subtraction. Kruger gone, having speed on the left side, which should improve the rush.
I agree.
No, what's interesting is Agba, a lot of the times that he would work with Kruger and be rushing off of the right side against the left tackle. So he was not over on Kruger's side all that often. Was that a big transition for him if they flip the sides when he's in a two-point stance?
No, it shouldn't. And I just think for the benefit of him, especially this early in his career, to be able to play both, to have his hand on the ground and be in a two-point and do those both things, while it might hinder his development at one or the other, so he's good at both but not great at either. For right now, it helps him collectively to not only understand, it's the kind of that progression I talk about when you're a young player, is you learn what you do, and then you learn what we do, and then we learn what they do. So right now, I think Ogba has learned what he does with his hand on the ground, and he learns what he does when he's an outside linebacker. Now we need, because he's played two positions, it helps him now learn what we are doing collectively on when we call a defense, why are we calling a defense, and what are the fits of everybody besides myself at either, you know, five technique, seven technique, or stand up outside linebacker. And then, and I think as he's going to learn after tonight and the next, say, what, 8 or 9 days leading up to September 11th, is he's going to learn what they do, because we're going to master and have a game plan, and it's become like the back of your hand. You know, very quickly over the next, you know, the extra couple of days that we're going to get in preparation, we're going to know what we do defensively very well, which he will know. And then over the course of that time, you're also going to learn what they do. What has Philly shown? Who are they? What are their tendencies? And you start building that stuff into your brain as well.
Let's go to David in Rocky River. David, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Good, man.
Good. I'll be at the game tonight. Just want to see. I totally agree with Nathan on, I'd like to see more out of the defense than I do the offense. Personally, I don't think Chicago's defense is that good, so I'd like to see them move the ball a little bit, but I'm really looking to see how the defense plays against this. I think that's really what's going to make us compete with these other teams, is, as we've seen in the past, defense wins championships. So I want to see that, make them, have someone step up and just make some plays.
Yeah, I'd like to see somebody step up and make plays. And again, this should be an advantageous situation. This should be our ones against their backups, maybe even their third string. You know, I think we will see some Brian Hoyer, David Fales as well for Chicago. But these guys have got to be able to go out there and make some plays and at least establish a tone that it looks good. We want to see what it looks like. And the offense should be able to do what they want against the defense that is already struggled this entire preseason,
right,
and probably won't be playing it.
And
starters,
if there really is a significant disparity between, you know, our ones and their twos, because their twos are twos for a reason and our ones are ones for a reason, I want to see us be the dominant football team, be the more physical team, and again, mow these guys up and down the field and make them look bad. Make them look like twos.
Yes. That we should be able to.
That's what I mean. And if we don't, that's cause for concern.
Right, which is why it's a little bit of, you know, I think they need the work. I think the confidence is good for them, and I think they should be able to have something specific that they want to accomplish, and I think that's up to Hugh Jackson and Pep Hamilton what exactly that is for their offensive series, but I think they should come up with that, and same thing on the other defensive side of the ball with, of course, Ray Horton. Now let's talk about the offensive side of the ball. Right now the Browns, three quarterbacks on the roster, RG3, Kessler, McCown. I think all three make the
team. All make the team.
We're going to see RG3, I think, briefly. I would bet we see Josh McCown. And now you really have to take a step back for a second, right? Because let's say Minnesota, Sean Hill, okay, we liked you when you were the backup and we never thought you were going to have to be a full season starter, but if we needed you for a game or two, but now we know Teddy's done for the year. Do you put McCown out there and hope that he has a couple good series to maybe drive it up? Or do you in no way, shape, or form want to risk injury to Josh McCown in case the phone rings prior to that week one and they say, okay, you want that second, you want that third, let's do it?
That's a great way to think about it. And, well, let me ask you,
what would be the highest
value for Josh McCown that you think another team that is as desperate as Minnesota and maybe even Dallas are right now?
I think Minnesota is the team that is
But how about this? Think about it. Do you think if Minnesota with Josh McCown, who was primed to win the NFC North, you know, and go toe to toe with the Packers and be a double digit win football team with Josh McCown, and I think Josh McCown might be an older version of Teddy Bridgewater and actually have a little bit better arm, who can throw it down the football field a little bit better. They go double digit win. Do you think the 2018 first round pick for Josh McCown? Because if Minnesota does go 10-6, 11-5, that pick is going to be in the 20s somewhere.
I would say that. I mean, I would love that. I just don't.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I would.
I mean,
love
something
it.
Down the road, down the road. And I mean, the reason why I say that as well, because if you, Sashi Brown, Paul De Podesta's track record is to get more value than what they're trading away.
I'm not saying I'm sure, but knowing Sashi and Paul and Hugh as we do, that if they got to a second round pick in 2017 or 2018, I'm pretty sure that that kind of a trade would be made. Even a third, I would bet that there's a good chance that that trade is made because that's such a valuable thing. And now, Kessler ready? But I'm just saying from a strategy standpoint, I wonder what the thinking is. And we'll know tonight when they go out there with Josh McCown if he plays much at all. And the other side of it is, do you want to see – give Cody Kessler as many opportunities as he can get because for a long time he's probably going to be running scout team and
yes,
that's all he's going to be doing
I
in
do.
Practice.
Cody Kessler is definitely going to play the entire second half.
Yeah, I would think
so. And I would say probably half of the second quarter. And I think that goes back to, you know, your point about how much is Josh McCown going to play. And in talking about this, if the Cleveland Browns entertained, you know, an offer that you were speaking of, a second or third round pick in exchange for Josh McCown in 17 or 18, what do we then do at quarterback? Are we, you know, ear to the street for the waiver wire on a backup quarterback besides Cody Kessler?
Cowboys, by the way, have announced the signing of quarterback Gerard Johnson, who cleared waivers on Tuesday, spent training camp with the Ravens. I know that they had worked out Austin Davis, formerly of the Cleveland Browns, but I don't think there is much. Obviously, it doesn't seem like they have signed him yet, as they claimed Gerard Johnson off of waivers who cleared waivers. They signed him after he was with the Ravens. So I think we see a lot of Cody Kessler today. I think that that's going to be good at the quarterback position. The running back position, Crow and Duke are making this team. I believe Malcolm Johnson's making this team. He's the only fullback here, and I think they do want to have a fullback. You know, we had Rex up there in Cincinnati last year. The real battle to me comes down to Raheem Mostert and Terrell Watson, and if Mostert is able to go, I know we missed last week, does he get in ahead of Watson? What's the indication there? Who comes in first? We know Mostert is probably our best kick returner as
right.
well. That gives him a little bit of an edge.
And
so,
both have practice squad eligibility as well.
Yes, and I believe when you look at, you know, Terrell Watson, he's a bigger guy. Mostert's second year out of Purdue, Terrell Watson from Azusa Pacific. Watson, the big guy, Mostert a little bit shiftier. Mostert, interestingly enough, Mostert is our lightest running back at 197 pounds. Terrell Watson, our biggest running back at 240 pounds, even bigger than Malcolm Johnson, the fullback. So I think Mostert's looked better in the entirety of the offseason. You know what he does for you on special teams as well. The question becomes, what direction does Hugh Jackson want to go there? And I think as long as he's healthy, it's going to be Mostert.
I agree.
But Terrell Watson, as we saw Isaiah Crowell multiple years ago,
he's going to get a great opportunity tonight.
And he's a bruiser and might have the opportunity to get a lot of carries and wear down these backups of the Chicago Bears.
Sure. I completely agree with it. I know that hopefully he's savoring the opportunity to show that tonight. And if Raheem Mostert does not play tonight, you know, it could essentially be a little bit to the detriment, you know, of his role here with the Cleveland Browns, because you question, is he going to be ready? And if Watson plays well and Mostert doesn't play at all, you know, he might get the nod. The only thing that I see is Mostert is one of our key kickoff returners, but he's also been a great coverage guy as well. Very active on special teams. So his value, I believe, is higher, you know, on where he's likely to play his role for the Cleveland Browns, whereas Watson, his role has been strictly on offense.
Yes. Yes. And we'll see going forward what that means. That's one of the things to really watch tonight. I think that's one of the battles that is out there. Mostert versus Watson to be the team's third running back in 2016. When we come back, we'll hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson. We got some sound from him. We'll continue to go through this offense and tell you what to watch for tonight between the Browns and the Bears, the final game of the preseason. We also want to know what you're watching for, what you're looking for, what you need to see. 216-578-0850. Zagur and Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl. Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Got a chance to talk to Hugh Jackson earlier, and here's what he had to say, kind of just recapping the last week and also getting ready for tonight. And we'll start with this. What's the biggest takeaway from being down in Tampa all of last week?
I think the most important thing is being able to take practice to the game field. I thought we had two great days of work against Tampa Bay where I thought we played extremely well in practice, but the games are a little different. So we got to be able to take what we do in practice and apply it to the game.
And I think that was a big lesson. Good week of practice didn't lead to a good week, a good performance in the game. But you've told me back in San Diego there are weeks where you guys would have great practices, not have good games, and weeks where you'd have terrible practices and great games. So
correct.
Typically it's aligned. Good practice leads to a good game typically, but as we saw, anything can happen.
There are times, yeah, absolutely, where you feel like you are so prepared, you know this team so well, you know, when they come out and they do one thing little, you know, little different, or they basically line up in what they do best that you know they're going to do, and they execute it at a level that you're not ready for. And so it's like a little bit of a smack to the face, and then you're caught off guard, you know, in the NFL, you get down, you know, 10-0, you get down by a touchdown, there's times where it feels like a bottomless pit where you can't, no matter what you do, you can't come back from something that happens, especially, you know, in the first half.
You know what's interesting about the NFL is that all it takes is a touchdown, a stop, and a touchdown. That's 14 points. A 14-point swing can happen.
And that's a blowout in the NFL.
Fairly quickly, but then it is a blowout in the NFL.
Right.
It is such a momentum game.
It's like the NBA, though, too.
It is, but the NBA has – you have multiple big runs usually.
Correct. Yes.
And the NFL, it's such a grind that it's difficult.
And that's why, you know, the emphasis, even for me at the high school level, it has always been at the college level. And for the same thing is, that's why we used to call, at least defensively, after the, you know, the offense turns the ball over. So the offense, you know, throws a pick or, you know, fumbles the football, especially, you know, in your own territory. We used to call it putting out the fire. And that's why, you know, when the ball gets turned over in your zone and you force them, they go three and out and they kick a field goal. That's a win.
That's a huge win.
That's a huge win. Or they turn the ball at the 50-yard line and then, you know, you get them to punt. That's a huge win because they just got all the momentum. And when that happens on the road, you know, the crowd is in their favor. They're all pumped up. The team wants to go take advantage of that momentum. And when you stall it, you immediately flip all that momentum very quickly on its head.
And that's kind of like a step back three with a hoop and a harm, a 4-point swing right
yes.
there. When you can stop them deep in your territory after a turnover. Hugh Jackson, also, we talked about the moving on from Paul Kruger. We saw more four-man fronts than ever. We talked about it, those numbers after that game, over 50% of the time they're actually playing four-man front as opposed to a three-man front, which is a departure for Ray Horton in his 3-4 scheme. Ask Hugh Jackson, why four down linemen with all those different looks we saw down in Tampa?
I think Ray's done a great job. I've asked Ray to really, you know, analyze everything that we're doing so that we can best put our players in the right spots, and that's truly what he's all about. And I support him wholeheartedly with anything that we're trying to do, whether it's to stop the run, stop the pass, everything that we need to do to get an offense stopped as we move forward.
They'll do anything they have to do. Hugh Jackson with Cincinnati for the last, you know, 5 years saw a 4-3 defense be incredibly effective.
Yeah.
Now, he hired Ray Horton, so he knew he was bringing in that 3-4. You look at our personnel. You look at what's happened with the moves. Moving on from a Paul Kruger, you draft Agba, a 4-3 D end in college. You draft Nassib, a 4-3 D end in college. And these are the two young guys that are standing out to you. All of a sudden, you wonder. And Nate Orchard, by the way, was a 4-3 D end at Utah as well. He was.
And
then
the
other
reason
linebacker.
Is because there's not many 3-4 defenses at the college level. So everybody drafted linebackers and defensive linemen aside, you know, as well, they're accustomed to the 4-3. So that's why some guys, you see an immediate impact from guys defensively who go from a 4-3 into a 4-3. It's a lot of the same verbiage and same terminology.
And same expectations, same role, same reads.
Yes.
And so this is a different thing, but they are using more of those four-man fronts, and I think we'll see some of that tonight. I'm very curious. I think that's one thing really to watch. How are they deploying this front with these guys out there now? Are they going to kind of do, you know, an underfront or an overfront so that they can get Agba some on one, whichever side they decide to go with him, with his hand in the ground, even though we're technically still in a 3-4?
Correct.
So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to me to see how they go with that.
And the thing that we've heard from Hugh Jackson all along in regards to players, he's now applying it to the scheme and the defense. We're going to see what players can do and play to their strengths and have them on the field doing what they do best. And I think now we're, you know, collectively doing it from a scheme standpoint. If we're not that great at 3-4 yet, let's adjust to something more simpler. Play things, you know, a little bit more close to the vest in a 4-3 where guys are more comfortable. And I think all along, you know, even prior to training camp, I want to say, you know, you and maybe someone, and even maybe Gibbs, were kind of like talking about this team might be more suited based on their personnel for a 4-3 than a 3-4.
Yeah, and we'll see that tonight. I think that's another thing to keep an eye on. How are they utilizing these guys on that defensive front? We know Nassib and Agba really stood out. You get them both on the field together, you're probably going to find yourself in some four-man front positions. Now, one bright spot from last week, of course, was Josh Gordon. I don't know how much we'll see him tonight. I think I think when the starters are out there, you're not going to see Josh Gordon.
Right.
Maybe a little bit if they go to a three-receiver set, but quite frankly, these guys have to get ready for Philly, and Josh Gordon won't be able to play against the Philadelphia Eagles. So he did look great, though, and Hugh Jackson giddy about what he saw from Josh.
I can't wait till he has an opportunity to play for us, you know, on a consistent basis. He's very talented, and I think his teammates see that. And I think he wants to be out there, and he's done a great job, you know, not just on the field but also off the field. So we're excited to have him.
We're all excited to have him, and I think it certainly is fun to see Josh Gordon out there. Two routes, two targets, one double move, one straight fly, 87 yards, and a touchdown.
Making it look easy, man.
Against Brent Grimes.
I know.
Not against a jabroni off the corner, you know. This was against Brent Grimes. When talking about the moves, and this was a pointed question about the Mingo and Kruger moves, was one of the impetuses for that move the play of the younger guys, Agba and Nassib?
This is about performance, and, you know, so some people have had chances before these young guys, and I think we feel as a staff and organization it's time to give these young guys an opportunity to see if they can do it on a consistent basis.
Now, I know that at one point in your career, you were probably on the wrong side of the older-younger equation.
Yes, I was.
I know. We don't want to dwell there. But in the locker room, do the guys get a sense of, hey, how does the locker room see moves like this? Because Agba and Nassib have impressed. They see these guys in practice, and they're probably like, hey, man, let's see these young guys play. Is there ever that sense among veterans, or are veterans like, yo, man, I waited my time, you wait your time?
No, I mean, and I think, you know, Paul Kruger, for example, you know, you and I both communicated with him and, you know, wishing well after being released by the Cleveland Browns. And I think the one thing that you're learning very quickly, and I learned, you know, not so much early in my career, but on the, you know, the back half of my career, is this is a business. And when you walk in this building, the sooner you understand that this is your job and you are here to become a professional football player, one of 2,500 people in the world that have the blessing and opportunity to play this game and make the kind of money that you can make, the better you are equipped mentally and emotionally to take on the business side of this game. Physically, you know, there's those that are gifted. There are those that work hard and they put out a product that allows them to stay in the league a long time. But when you understand it, and I think the message that would be coming across to me is these guys, in reference to Sashi Brown, Hugh Jackson, aren't playing around. There are things that they want to see out of your characteristics that you have to make this football team. Consistency is one of them. Physicality is one of those. And effort as well. Those are the things that you want to see. And that's why the Kindreds of the world, Nassibs and Agba, are not only doing it with their play on the field, but they're in practice as well. They're impressive each and every day. And that's why they're given the opportunity. So when you draw roster together, it's the guys that aren't doing it that should go, man, this guy's really balling, and what is he doing to get that opportunity? Well, I got to start doing what he's doing. So learn from some of the young guys that go no holds barred in practice, and it carries over to success in the football game. Instead of taking a day off, you know, or kind of lollygagging through a drill, when you know that you're being evaluated every second you step on that grass.
Yeah, and the other part of it is knowing the way that this organization is operating. When you're that veteran guy, you have to make sure that it is night and day clear.
Correct.
How much better you are than
you want to look like the veteran.
You want to look like, I'm a professional, I am going to give you more productivity than
Correct.
This young guy, to the point where you need to continue to pay me as well. As the great Al Saunders walks through the building, getting ready for the Browns preseason finale against the Bears. Oh, he's a young quarterback.
He can throw. Yes, he can.
Yes, he can. The man, Al Saunders there. All right, let's hear a little bit more from Hugh Jackson talking about the trade. And this is, again, one of those things. This organization trying to get themselves positioned to be successful in the short and long term, certainly the long term as well, with the trade of Andy Lee.
It's always a cost when you lose somebody as talented as him, but it's always a benefit, too, when you can acquire a fourth-round draft pick. And I think we're very excited about acquiring the draft pick for our football team, you know, and understanding that Andy is getting up there, you know, in age, but still very talented. But it allows us to really look forward to the future. And we knew that there's still some other punters out there that we really like that we think can help our football team.
And I can tell you that the team does like the two punters, the one Redfern they got back in the trade, and then Paladin, who they signed this week. They like both of those guys and are certainly confident. I don't know if we'll see both kick. I would imagine we will see both punt in kind of a very quick trial by fire. But Andy Lee, one of the best punters in the National Football League, Pro Bowler in 2007, 2009, 2011, three-time first-team All-Pro 2007, 2011, and 2012. The Browns got him back in the before the 2014 season for a seventh-round pick.
Which I was raving about because I, having played with Andy Lee in San Francisco, knew the value that he could bring to any team. Now, it's not the difference between potentially winning or losing a game or, you know, having a winning season or making a push, as we've seen and we've talked about before, but isn't definitely an asset to have.
Was that really only last year? He only was with us for 1 year?
Yeah.
All right, so it was before the 2015 season.
Correct.
So 1 year ago at this time, or a little before this time, we traded a seventh-round pick for Andy Lee. That was at the point that he was 4 years removed from his last Pro Bowl. We go one more year forward. Not a Pro Bowler last year, not an All-Pro this last year, and somehow he's worth a fourth-round pick a year later. So that's why when we talk about, you know, what Josh McCown could be worth, what anybody could be worth, nope. If you remember the speculation about Barkevious Mingo is that he'd bring back a conditional seventh. They got a fifth. If you had said the Browns were going to trade Andy Lee, it probably wouldn't for a conditional pick,
right?
A seventh at the most. They got a fourth. So you never know. When Sasha apparently – master negotiator.
Wheeling and dealing.
Wheeling and dealing. And then our final cut with Hugh Jackson from earlier this week is, why are you playing the starters tonight?
I mean, we need to become a better football team. Obviously, I didn't think we played as well as we could play last week in the end. I thought we practiced extremely well. And I want to make sure we have a great feeling heading into the opener. So I thought our guys need to get out there and compete a little bit more before we get ready for next week.
And that's exactly why. It's what we've said. They need to compete a little more. They need to get some reps together. Remember, RG3 and Corey Coleman haven't yet completed a pass in the preseason. We need to see that happen.
Yes.
This defense, whatever the first team defense is going to be, we haven't seen it together yet this preseason, especially in the front seven, because Paul Kruger was working with the ones all preseason. So we need to see those guys together. So there are things to be done. We'll continue to look at some of the various positions as well. When we come back, we'll take a look at the wide receivers and the tight ends on the offense. Scott Petrak coming up at 2. We've got Corey Coleman at 2:15. What to watch for in the games, our top three things we're going to watch for at 2:30. So call us up, 216-578-0850. What are you looking for? How are you feeling headed in this final preseason game? There will be a winner. Chicago 0-3 in the preseason. The Browns 0-3 in the preseason. Somebody would go ahead and snatch that victory here tonight, which is good to see. By the way, just really quickly, what is going on with Colin Kaepernick? And now he's wearing these socks with the police officer dressed as a pig, or a pig. It's like a pig face and a police hat. Those are the socks he's wearing at training camp. I respect his right to free speech, but I feel like he's just trying to get himself.
He is. And have you I think what ultimately, I think this is his camp has made a comment, and multiple general managers or individuals, you know, on the football operation side of things have made comments that they wouldn't touch him. They wouldn't consider him for their team at all, regardless of his talent. And then I think –
Can I say I have a problem with
sure.
that? Sure. Because there are – Greg Hardy will continue to get looks from teams and got a look from the Dallas Cowboys. You may not agree with what Colin Kaepernick said. You may not agree with what he did. You may find it disrespectful. You may find it unpatriotic. You may find it un-American. You may find it blasphemous on a certain level. But he didn't go out and commit a crime.
Correct.
He did not beat a woman. He did not.
Right. But again, take into account that he is in a quarterback competition right now.
I don't think anything he's doing
is a number. You know, he's got an $11 million number. And potentially, I mean, unless he revamped his career, he was on his way out of the NFL already. And he comes with a big number. And then you do something like this.
Yeah, it's not smart.
No,
it's not smart.
If he was his agent, it's got to be like,
what are
getting
you
gray by the day.
He's like, bro,
come on,
what are you doing? All right, let's look at the receivers. We'll take this up to the top of the hour, then we'll have Scott Petrak with us to kick off hour number two. Nacho Donut wants to know, I need to know if Mo Pedman rides a moped. If Mo Pedman does not ride a moped, then it is a waste of a great name. Of course he rides a moped. However,
we reference the flat tires on his moped very consistently.
They are sad, unhappy tires. So let's look at these wide receivers tonight. I think when you look at this group, I think the real question is, do they keep six? Do they keep seven? And one of those, if they do get to seven, I believe, you know, Marlon Moore makes it in that special teams role. But Corey Coleman's going to make this football team. I believe Andrew Hawkins is going to make this football team. Rashard Higgins is going to make this football team. Ricardo Lewis is going to make this football team. Terrell Pryor is going to make this football team. That's five. Josh Gordon doesn't count right now. He's suspended. So beyond those five, did Taylor Gabriel do enough? Has Darius Jennings done enough, because he's worked on a lot of first-team special teams, and he, if Raheem Mostert doesn't make it, he's the guy that's been working as the kick returner without Mostert. Does Marlon Moore make it for what he can do on special teams? And then there's Jordan Payton, one of the four receivers you drafted. Now, it seems to me he's not getting reps or opportunities, which is either we're cutting him or we're not putting him out there for practice squad reasons.
Yeah. I think we're not putting him out there for practice squad reasons. In particular, for Jordan Payton. And I think it's our best opportunity to continue his development with the Cleveland Browns, because we did, in fact, draft him. And I think him missing the 2 or 3 months of offseason work to be back at UCLA getting his degree worked against him in this case. And he was behind. And I think with the questions around the offense, you want the opportunity to evaluate everyone else, and he just wasn't able to crack that top five list, the development of Pryor, the reemergence of Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman and the player he's going to be for us. There were just priorities in front of him. Hollywood Higgins, took advantage of being here this offseason. If I had to guess, I would say at this point it would be seven, including Marlon Moore, to start the season as your specialty.
Who's your sixth?
It'd probably be Jennings. Because he's probably the cheapest of them, and then Jennings would probably be, I would release Jennings, but he's going to get the opportunity to double dip. You release Jennings to make room for Josh Gordon when he comes back week four.
And you can put Darius Jennings back onto your practice.
Correct.
There. At the tight end position, there are five here. Gary Barnes, Seth DeValve, Connor Hamlett, J.P. Holtz, Randall Telfer. I think four of them make it. I think Holtz is the odd man out, and I don't think this is much of a competition or a tough decision spot on the offensive side of the football. Then you get to the offensive linemen. Currently 12 are here. We know, let's just go through who is making it. Joel Bitonio is making this team. Cam Irving is making this team. John Greco is making this team. Austin Pastore is making this team. Joe Thomas, that's your starting five. No question, Spencer Drango is making this team. Sean Coleman's making this team. That's seven. The question becomes, has Alvin Bailey done enough to make this team as your kind of, he can play the guards or the tackle positions? Because right now, your Drango and Coleman are both tackles. So I would say yes, and I think you end up keeping eight offensive linemen. And we'll go through this tomorrow when we have a better look at how they've played. Mike Matthews hasn't played much. I think Garth Gerhardt is a second-team center, maybe has an opportunity to be a practice squad guy out of Arizona State. Dan France, the young man out from North Royalton, who was out of Michigan State, has struggled. I don't know what, but he might be somebody they end up deciding to keep around on the practice squad. But I think when you watch this second-team offensive line today, I think it's good how Alvin Bailey, the kind of performance he turns in. He had a good game against Tampa Bay, actually. I think it could already be set in stone that he's making it or not, but I think his performance today, if he has a good one, could solidify his roster.
I agree. As we set right now, it's going to be Coleman, Drango, Bailey.
That's what I think as well.
I believe. And I think in some cases, because you know what Bailey's capable of based around his past, that if he doesn't have a significant drop-off tonight on what we've seen so far, he makes his football team. And then I think, as you always see in every offensive line room, one guy doesn't play one position anymore. Guys are shifting around. Greco can play center and guard. Pastore can play, tackle and guard as well. So, and even if they probably go over to left side if something were to happen to Joe Thomas, there's the flexibility that we have. Drango's going to be very universal for us as offensive linemen. And I think that's the way he's going to develop as well.
Absolutely. All right, when we come back, Scott Petrak from the Elyria Chronicle Telegram will be our guest. We'll also hear from Corey Coleman in the second hour and tell you what to watch for the top three things. We want your phone calls as well, 216-578-0850. Keep the tweets coming right here on ESPN 850 WKNR.